Welcome to Spoiler Peace Theater, the podcast that doesn't give a shit about spoilers. We just want to talk about the movies. My name is Evan Crean. My pronouns are he, him. I'm co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living.
My name is Megan Kearns. My pronouns are she, her. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network, and I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
My name is Dave Riedel. My pronouns are he, him. I write and talk about movies, and I am also a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association.
For now, dot, dot, dot.
Whoa!
I thought it changed things up.
Wow. Whoa, cliffhanger!
I've been waiting to pull that joke out for how long?
7 years.
Sad I didn't think of it sooner, actually.
Wow.
But yes, you are.
Damn, you are shaking and some
period,
shit up, Evan.
Full stop.
Yeah, this is
no ellipses here. Wow.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So see if we can recover from this. Was not expecting that.
No, you weren't expecting it. Jesus.
You're the one who did it.
I know.
I don't know if Dave and I can recover from this.
Some real shit starter today. Okay. So we have two movies we're going to talk about on this week's show. First, we want to tell you what's happening over at our Patreon, our exclusive audio. We do exclusive audio every week for our Patreon. And this week we're talking about the 1955 film, The Night of the Hunter, starring Robert Mitchum as a super creepy guy.
Yeah. And I would just like to add, because I do bring something to this show, that was my suggestion.
And it was a great suggestion.
Wait, is there a question that you don't bring something to this show?
I'm just defending myself against Evan's, you know, unprovoked attack.
His character assassination.
Yeah, seriously. Dave Ukraine Riedel being attacked by Evan Russia Crean. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I just made it
spicy.
Political. Oof. Megan's actually off camera right now, so I'm not really sure.
Oh my god. What is happening?
Yeah. Sorry. That joke, I admit, was in poor taste. I apologize.
Okay. Again, was not expecting things to go this way, but yeah. All right, we're going with it. We're rolling with it.
Yeah. It's just gone off the rails.
So if you're a patron, definitely check out our conversation on The Night of the Hunter. And if you're not a patron, consider joining and you get cool stuff like exclusive audio suggested by Dave or by all of us. Right. But for this week's show, two movies we're going to talk about. One is Watcher. It's a horror movie. And two is Fire Island, which is a queer rom-com. And we're going to start by talking about Watcher. And I will do my best not to put the word "the" in front of it, because it does not belong there. So, Watcher is directed by Chloe Acuno. And it is, and written by her. And also written by Zach Ford. And the IMDb says, based on the screenplay by Zach Ford. Not sure what that means, Dave. You usually know this. What is there a?
It means, I would think, don't quote me on this, even though it's going on the fucking tape. But what that usually means is you had a screenplay, a complete screenplay, if it says based on a screenplay, and the basic idea is the same, but the story is rewritten such that you have to say it's like changed enough to not give the original writer credit, but it's also not like a story by thing because it's more important than that. If it's a union thing, it could be a one way. If it's not, it could be another way. So,
gotcha. All right. So let's do our one sentence IMDb summary here. As a serial killer stalks the city, Julia, a young actress who just moved to town with her boyfriend, notices a mysterious stranger watching her from across the street.
Okay, that's inaccurate. She's no longer an actress or actor, and they're married. So,
are they married?
They're both wearing wedding bands. I mean,
I did not notice that.
Or did?
Well, alrighty then. So they are married, and they didn't just move to town.
They moved to Bucharest.
He said
moved
in
to
air
Bucharest.
Quotes, they moved to Bucharest. She does not speak the language, so that's that's also a pretty significant barrier.
Although it's important to note that she does learn enough over the course of the movie to know when she's being made a fool of at a party.
Yeah.
It's true.
And
it's true.
It's a very important moment. So, but I skipped ahead about 85 minutes.
You did. And our lead is Micah Monroe, who you may remember from It Follows. And I know she's been in other stuff, but that's a role that stuck out for me. I was like, oh yeah, Micah Monroe from It Follows. Nice. And husband is played by Carl Glusman. I don't think I knew him from anything. And then our watcher slash serial killer is Bern Gorman, who, by the way, just has a creepy face and it always plays creeps. I've never seen him not play a creep.
I saw him play a guy who wasn't a creep once, but I wouldn't say he was a nice guy. But he wasn't like, you know, going to, you know, carry your head around in a bag.
In a shopping bag? Yeah.
Yikes.
So anyway, so she moves to town. She doesn't know the language. She sees this. First of all, the first night that they're there in their new apartment, there's been a murder across the street. And there was a guy who, you know, found a woman who had been decapitated, and they arrest him. He was like a plumber or something, supposedly. They arrest him. They're like, okay, we got him. Solved. And then she sees this creeper across the way who is staring at her like through the shades. Like she can see his silhouette just staring through her window. She keeps seeing that happen. She tells your husband about it, and he's kind of like, eh. Like, he's taking her seriously about it at first, and then she sees somebody following her. She goes to the movies. She sees someone follow her there. She goes to the grocery store. Looks like it's going to be the same guy, possibly, as the guy across the way. She asks the police to go over and talk to them, and the husband goes over, and it's, you know, he's kind of taking her seriously at first, and then it just keeps coming up, and then he basically just does the thing that all shitty husbands, boyfriends in movies do.
And you mean men?
Yes.
Let's just say it. It's men.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dismissive, gaslighty, and it turns into that kind of movie where she's not only being stalked by this guy who is trying to kill her, but she's also dealing with a shitty partner who doesn't believe her and just believes that she's making shit up or blowing things out of proportion. And it's like, what do you want me to do? You want to move? We can't do that. You want to go home? Can't do that either. What do you want from me?
I mean, you could do both of those things, really. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
But.
And then we get to the point where Dave was mentioning earlier where he's making fun of her in front of his coworkers at a party. And then she realizes it and then storms off and goes home. And guess what? The murderer is there.
Yeah, next
Not
door.
In her apartment, in her friend's apartment next door. Her friend's been missing. And then she goes to check it out. And then he's there and fight ensues.
Yeah.
Boy, does it.
Yeah.
Boy, does it. So. Megan, you had seen this before, right?
Yeah, I saw this. This premiered at Sundance this year, and I saw it when it was at Sundance. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, had you seen this before?
I had not.
All right. Well, what did you both think?
Did we talk about it, Megan, on the show, the Sundance show? Okay.
We didn't talk about it. Yeah, no.
Why don't you go ahead? Did you watch it again?
Oh, okay. I watched parts of it again. Okay. I didn't, unfortunately, did not have time to watch all of it again, but I watched a little bit. Yeah, I really liked this, and I was really glad to talk about it on the show and to revisit it. I think Chloe Okuno is so great. She directed my favorite of the VHS 94 segments, the Hail Ratma.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, which is so good. Yeah, and I think this is an incredibly tense film, and I think she has a really sharp eye for unnerving tension and really unsettling atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I think Micah Monroe gives a really great performance here. I'm sure people will compare it to It Follows, another great film about dread and constant, you know, lurking and stalking. And yeah, it's familiar terrain here too, but I think it's exceptionally well done. And what I really liked, I really like the cinematography as well.
Cinematography is great.
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I really... So Chloe Okuno said at Sundance that this took 6 years to get made, and this was a labor of love, and that she wanted to, quote, capture some of the fear and isolation we feel as women And then in the director's statement for the press notes that accompany the release of this, she also talked about the kind of ubiquitous dread that women feel navigating society. And I think she does an excellent job capturing that, that for women in society, so often women and non-binary people, we are constantly looking over our shoulders, constantly taught to be ever vigilant, constantly having to worry about rape, constantly having to worry about being assaulted, you know, and, you know, you're taught about how to put your keys in your fist so you can defend yourself. And if you see somebody walking behind you, you cross the street, and you're just always looking over your shoulder. And this, this film really captures that feeling to such a heightened degree. But like you said, Evan, it also really taps in to the gaslighting and how women are thought to be too sensitive and emotional and hysterical and irrational and, oh, you're just imagining it. It's not that serious. And but the reality is that these are real issues, you know, stalking and abuse and violence against women and misogyny and everything are things that, you know, we're dealing with. And so it's really, really frustrating experience to deal with this in the world. And I think Chloe Okuno and Micah Monroe's performance, I think together and the cinematography, like it all coalesces to have a really great experience. And I found this to be a really fascinating and riveting film.
I mostly agree with that. I think, I think that it looks great. I think it's really well directed. I think Micah Monroe is fantastic. I think her husband's really good. And of course, Burn Gordon, whatever, is the creepy guy.
Burn Gorman, yeah. I always want to call him Burnt, even though I know that's not right.
I like Burnt better.
Burnt Gorman. Yeah, that's got a little bit of menace, but also humor in it. So anyway, he's really good. Unfortunately, I think where this movie doesn't work so well is the screenplay is kind of predictable, which is, I mean, it's his genre, right? So it's just so clear from the moment you actually see the guy's face and he's carrying that bag. It's just like, yeah, of course he's doing, of course he's the killer. I mean, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. There's and there's just clues to it too when they go into what's the friend next door? What's her name?
I think Irina.
Irina is the next door neighbor. Micah Monroe calls her and hears her phone ringing in the next room, even though she in the apartment next door, even though they've all made it very clear that she hasn't been home for a day. And then they're in there searching the apartment and there's that shot from the closet, like peering out at them. And it's just like, well, we're just setting this all up. I mean, this is, there's no mystery as to where this is going to go. I think the strength of this movie is, as you were saying, Megan, kind of the portrayal of the creepy stalker fear, dread that women have to live with. That all works, but I think the thriller part of it is unfortunately really predictable. And I found it a serious bummer. When at the end, when Micah Monroe goes into the apartment and is surprised by Burnt and gets her throat cut. And then she like is trying to get to the gun that she knows Irina has in the coffee table. When she lies down there, I was like, is this movie going to have her die on the floor? Because that would be amazing as far as like a I didn't see it coming kind of way.
It did make me think that, yeah, it did make me think that for a second.
But then, you know, she, you know, I guess isn't bleeding as profusely. I mean, she didn't cut her jugular. He did, you know, just.
He didn't get it, a full way across. It was kind of like a
quick. I don't think he was trying to kill her. I think he's trying to keep her quiet. You know, because he decapitated several of the victims. So it's like not like he didn't know what he was doing. And I also dug the scene on the subway when he is gaslighting her. And he's clearly got Irina's head in the bag. Oh, you know.
And yeah, you keep looking at it and you're like, what else could be in there but a head in that bag?
Right?
Yeah.
And there's no one else on that subway. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's so good.
Right. So yeah, it's such a great scene. See, to build on what you're saying, Dave, like it didn't bother me like knowing those kinds of things that were coming. Just I feel like the moment to moment was so tense.
Oh, for sure.
when yep. she's trapped on the train and she has to talk to him. And you're like, it's highly likely that's the head in the bag. It's highly likely that he's the, you know, he's really the stalker, even though he like is pretending like he's not. But still, it's like the fact that she's trapped there with him is just so tense. Or like when he shows up at her apartment with the cops demanding an apology for, you know, them harassing him and, you know, yelling at his dad, supposedly. And he forces her to shake his hand.
Did you notice how hard he gripped her hand when she pulls her hand away? Like her skin is white. From the force of his handshake.
Great touch. Great visual touch.
It was a great. I went back and like watched that moment again because I'm like, did I see that right? Did they, you know? So
yeah, I also agree with you, Evan, that knowing what's coming or having it be predictable, I actually found that made it much more tense for me because I'm like, oh my God, she's stuck with this guy. He's the one who did it. Like, so yeah, so knowing it actually, made it more tense. Not that that always works. And I agree with you, David, that it is very predictable, but I'm almost like wondering if that's intentional because
maybe,
for me, it made it creepier.
Maybe it's the whole point. It's just like, nobody believes, well, this woman, but women in general, but here it's going down just like she said, you know,
and it's so obvious and it can only be one guy. There's no other suspects. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so clear the whole time it's him. It's so clear the whole time he's following her. She's got it on videotape, you know, of him following
and even
her.
And even her own husband is being a jerk and doesn't believe her. So,
meanwhile, he's moved her to a country where she doesn't speak the language and he's working 80 hours a week. You know?
Right?
I mean,
yep, that high powered marketing job.
I do think that, you know, if you're going to be the kind of spouse, whichever one you are, who moves to a country where you don't speak the language and your partner is, you know, working a job that's very intense, you know, you should kind of be aware what you're getting into. But that combined with the culture shock that she's experiencing and then the fucking creep factor, it really makes you want to say, like, look, pal, you speak the language, okay? She's going to a cafe and, you know, getting the pronoun wrong on the coffee she's ordering. You know, she needs a little help, okay? So...
Exactly.
I can't believe she's as patient with him as she is for so long, frankly, because you can kind of see his interest. His portrayal, I think, is interesting because you can see that he doesn't believe her more or less from the beginning, but he decides, I'm going to be the good husband and just do this. And then he gets to the point where he's like, all right, well, fuck this. I've had enough. And then he basically tells her that and then leaves her and goes back to the party. I mean, yes, she did slap a tray full of drinks out of a waiter's hand, but I mean, still, go after your wife,
right?
Okay?
You don't just let her go by herself in a city where she doesn't, you know what I mean? Like walk by herself in the middle of the night, and so she ends up stuck on the train with a fucking killer
who has apparently followed her to the party, you know? So with Irina's head in the bag.
Oh my God,
but awful.
Getting back to what you were saying before, I thought that they might kill her. I thought she might die when she's like basically falls over in a puddle. But then I'm like, no, she's literally going to grab Chekhov's gun out of this table and she's going to kill the shit out of him when he's not paying attention. And so when he goes to leave and she guns him down in the doorway, I love the look that she gives her husband when she comes out and she's standing in the doorway. She gives him the best, like, fuck you, asshole look. Like, you made me do this and you made me do this all on my own. I had to kill this guy.
I also like how surprised Bernd looks when he gets shot. He's just like, what the fuck? He fucking got shot? It kind of reminded me of a less funny version of when James Remar gets shot in 48 hours. I can't believe it. I got shot as he screams. This is kind of what the look on this guy's face is like, holy shit, I'm the serial killer. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, but also the moment when he walks out of Irina's apartment and her and Micah Monroe's husband is in the hallway and they lock eyes and it's like, what the fuck? Oh my God. Those last few moments are good. So
really effective ending. This movie reminded me in a lot of ways, in a good way, of Lucky. I feel like there's just very similar vibes of like the stalker murder, you know, men are stalking women and women are like no one believes them and they're just being terrorized. It was really good. Really good movie.
Lucky is really good.
Which one is lucky? Yeah.
It's the one where the woman, there's a guy that comes to her house every night to try and kill her.
Oh,
and
she has right.
Yes. Kill him first.
Right. Yeah, that movie is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I feel like this make a great double feature.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
If you had the stamina from both of these kind of like heavy movies about men and misogyny and just all of that.
And stalking. Gaslighting.
All that stuff.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, was there anything else that we wanted to talk about with Watcher?
I just want to reiterate how good it looked. I was really, really pleasantly surprised. Because, you know, a lot of the times I think, oh, horror, thriller, you know, boilerplate. Nope. It's a fucking, fabulous looking movie. So.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I cannot wait to see what else Chloe Okuno does, because I think she's got such a great eye and she's just really an interesting filmmaker. And yeah, I think this is just really good. And yeah.
Agreed. Agreed, agreed, agreed. Looking forward to seeing what she does next.
Oh, I know what I was going to say. Speaking along those lines, I don't think it's always the case that like men can't tell women's stories, or that they, you know, or that women can't tell men's stories or what have you. But I definitely think, Evan, since you brought up the comparison with Watcher and Lucky, both made by women filmmakers, it's very clear that I think the fact that they're drawing on kind of a collective experience that women face really informs each of these films. And I think it does it in a really great way. Like, not that a man couldn't have made a great film too, dealing with the same topic, but I think there's small touches that are different when you actually have experienced a lifetime of that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It hits differently. It cuts just even slightly deeper. Like it really, I don't know. I was saying too recently to a friend of mine, like, I think, because we were talking about like representation and filmmaking, and I was just saying that like there's a lot of really great stuff that women are doing in horror. Like they're directing and writing really fantastic, really sharp films that have like great social commentary. And like, obviously people like us, we watch them and we're like, hell yeah, this is great. But I feel like it's flying under the radar for so many people. And it's like, I want more of those types of stories out there, and more, a little more, you know, mainstream, so more people know about them and can kind of dig into these movies like this and you know.
I think that's why I completely agree with everything you're saying, and I think that's why it's so exciting that this is getting a wide release. Like, so hopefully more people will have access to this and will be able to see this.
I hope so too.
Yeah.
Okay. So we ready to move on to Fire Island?
Sure.
Yes, yes.
Fire Island, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is a queer rom-com directed by Andrew Ahn and is written by Joel Kim Booster, who is the lead in the film. And I'm going to read the one sentence IMDb, and we're gonna need to expound upon this one, friends. This says, a pair of best friends set out to have a legendary week-long summer vacation with the help of cheap rosé and a group of eclectic friends.
What?
That is a gross oversimplification of this story. So, I mean, based on the title, if it wasn't obvious, this movie is about going to Fire Island, which is a well-known gay hangout. So this particular group of friends has a tradition of going there every year for, a week?
Yeah.
And they all stay in a house that's owned by Margaret Cho. She's their house mother. So they're going for yet another weekend. And you have the two leads are Joel Kim Booster and Bowen Yang. And they're kind of like they're best friends, but they're also kind of like polar opposites in terms of like what they're looking for. Like, you know, Bowen Yang is like, I want romance and I want it to be like a sweet thing. And like, I want to find like my person here. And Joel Kim Booster's character, Noah, he's like, well, I just want to like have sex and have fun and like, you know, just be physical and not worry. Like in the beginning of the movie, he like wakes up with a guy in his bed and was like, okay, you go now. Like, you leave. I have a trip to go to with my friends. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
And he makes a, Noah makes a vow to Howie Boenyang's character, like, I want you to get laid, and so I'm going to make it my mission for you to get laid, and I'm going to, like, put my own desires on the back burner and, like, throw myself into this. Yeah, I mean, so their group of friends, they go, and it's about finding romance on the island over the course of the week or so that they're there, and all kinds of hijinks ensue. So I feel like that's the broad points. I mean, it also is really important in terms of representation of gay culture and like showing the broad spectrum of people who exist. Like, you know, it's not just, we're not just like looking at one specific kind of gay person in this movie. It's like a full gamut and all of the like nuances and subtleties of real people and how they are and how they interact. And so I'll lead with saying that's one thing I really like about this movie, but I'd like to hear what both of you think about it.
Oh, Megan, you go first.
Okay. The other thing I was going to add is that this is also a riff on Pride and Prejudice, which is very, very cute. I adored this. I like Andrew Ahn as a filmmaker. His first film, Spa Night, is wonderful. It's so good. It's about a gay Korean-American man who is trying to explore sexuality. And it's just so good. And I just, and it has really striking visuals. And this does too. And I really, really enjoyed it. I found this joyous. I found it hilarious. I laughed out loud multiple times. And as you guys know, I usually just kind of like chuckle when something's amusing. But no, I laughed out loud a lot at certain jokes. And I think it's very sharply written. And I think that it could have been very easy. I love a rom-com, as y'all know, but I think it could have been very easy to not really necessarily write some complexity to these characters, and they are written that way. And like you said, Evan, we're seeing different perspectives. We're seeing different kinds of gay men. Also, one of the actors is non-binary, but all of the other actors, I believe, are out gay men, which is great. Margaret Cho is queer as well. She's bisexual. Although it really drives me, this is a sidebar, but it drives me bonkers that this is the second film in like 2 months that she's played a lesbian. And I'm like, yes, she's queer in real life, but she's bisexual. Like, why can we not just make her bisexual? But anyway, I digress. But I really, really liked this. And I like that it's a meta commentary on rom-coms. I like that there is discussion of consent and specifically enthusiastic consent, which is so great. And talk of revenge porn, and which is, you know, such a problem. But yeah, it's I think it's really great. And I think there are great conversations happening around monogamy and, you know, being sexually free and, you know, poly relationships, even though they never explicitly say poly, but they are kind of talking around that. But I think it's really, there's a kind of freedom to and an exuberance to showing a story that is exclusively with queer people in it. There are no straight people. There are no straight friends. And it's so often, I read this recently, and it's so true that most of the times in films, especially rom-coms, you might, if you're lucky, get like a gay best friend or a lesbian best friend or something like that.
Right.
But you don't often see queer characters in film in a queer circle of friends. And that's way more realistic. Like, it's very rare that just one queer person by themselves has no queer friends. And I'm not saying like nobody has that. But most of the time, you're gonna find other queer people. And I think what's so great about this film is it showcases that. It, while it acknowledges the bullshit of heteronormativity, it really embraces like, no, this is a gay film, this is a queer story, and these are queer characters, and this is just the world that it is. And I love that. I also love that it's talking about chosen family and the importance of chosen family. And the other thing that I love too is that Andrew Ahn's films always have a poignancy to them, and they just exude that. And I love that as jubilant as this is and fun and fluffy, you know, they're on vacation, it's rom-com, there's lots of sex, there's lots of making out, and there's still something incredibly sad about this. Like, I felt like I was watching a sunset watching this film, where it's beautiful, it's glowy, it's magical, it's fun, but it's also something coming to an end and kind of echoes right. the way that their house, their time at this house is coming to an end because Margaret Cho's characters won't have the house anymore. So they.
Right. She's going to sell it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So all in all to say, I really adored this.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear it.
Okay. Well, that's good because I didn't. But I didn't dislike it though either. So I think what I got hung up on was the. Was the Pride and Prejudice-ness of it, you know? Kind of the story beats, just even though, you know, different setting from what most of us are used to for rom-coms, et cetera. You know, you got a nice queer setting, representation, like you were just, I'm not going to repeat everything you just said. But I still felt like the story was kind of a predictable rom-com-y kind of story. And I also didn't love Bowen Yang's performance. I didn't really buy him. Hmm. I thought that, which may be Howie's, you know, hang up, but I was like, Bowen Yang's a good looking guy. He looks good without his shirt off and he's, you know, smart and funny. Like what's, you know, come on, man, go along with
not Joel. Compared to Joel Kim Booster though.
Joel Kim Booster right. is like a, well, and they have that conversation, like you chose yes. to be, you know, the lifting weights in shape guy and I'm the nerd. So yeah, there is that whole undercurrent to it and their relationship is obviously, and I do like this, their relationship is very, layered and complicated, built on a great love for one another. But I do like the fact that we don't know exactly why they are as distant as they are now. There are some, you know, Howie lives in San Francisco now, or is it Los Angeles? There's some of the
San Francisco,
right. It's the lawyer guy who lives in Los Angeles. Right. The other mm-hmm. thing that I had a problem with, there are so many characters that a lot of them kind of get short shrift, like the other friends at the house. Like you don't really learn too much about them, which is kind of a bummer because, there was the guy, the one who's basically revenge porned. I would have loved to have learned more about him just because, and like that psycho, you know, not psycho, that's the guy who posts that video. I mean, that whole storyline just is like, it comes up and then it goes away.
Yeah.
So,
that's a great point.
I think they handle it, in a rom-com as well as you can, but at the same time, it's like, I mean, he deleted the video of his phone. It's still in the fucking cloud, man. I mean, Jesus. Yeah, and I thought the doctor guy was kind of just like, oh, come on, would you just like get into Howie, Jesus? You know, obviously you like him, he likes you. Come on, your fucking Lyme disease boyfriend, please. You know, isn't that what they say? He's got Lyme disease.
Yeah, yeah. He's got Lyme disease.
He's got Lyme disease.
Which is like must be in remission based on his behavior. I don't know.
Which I'm sorry, I have to say the fact that one of the characters mentions Yolanda Hadid having that from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I lost my shit. It was hilarious. Yeah.
So the other thing about this is I've I wouldn't say that I've followed Joel Kim Booster, but I watch a lot of stand up. I see a lot of stand up live, so I'm really familiar with his work. And I think as a stand up, he's great. Like by and large, you know, joke hitting to joke failing ratio, very good, you know? So, but you know, I mean, you got to write stories and branch out and do different things. So I will be interested to see what he does next. But I think that, you know, you've got all of these, this great representation, et cetera, et cetera. But you also have, unfortunately, a kind of standard rom-com scenario. And having seen as many rom-coms as I have seen, it's like they just all kind of, eventually they all kind of blend together unless they're amazing. That being said, I did like Howie's relationship with, I can't remember Joel Kim Booster's name. What's his name?
Noah.
Noah and Howie's relationship. I like their relationship a lot.
Yeah, their friendship's
great.
But
I also love Margaret Cho, and I wanted to see more Margaret Cho just because I like Margaret Cho, you know. But this is what I mean.
She's always great.
There's so many characters in this movie. It's hard to, like, focus in on. Because you've also got Noah's ongoing will-they-won't-they with Will the lawyer. which is very clear from the beginning that there's actually some kind of spark between them. And it's like, all right, how long do we have to wait until they figure this out? Oh, until the end credits.
Will figured it out early. Well, Noah took quite a bit of time. I mean, as soon as Will saw him when he was like taking the water bottle out of the fridge, when he comes out, like he looks like he's like just worked out. Mm. You're like, Will's like, I'm into this guy and I'm going to you know, kind of, that's when I think he apologizes to him or something in a way to kind of like, and then Noah's just having none of it because he's right, he's got such a chip on his shoulder throughout this movie. I mean, several of the characters do,
not without reason, but
For sure, but yes. I think I loved this movie too.
I think the only thing
I really take issue with is the amount of voiceover in this.
There's a lot of voiceover.
I think
that's true.
It's pretty heavy in the beginning when I don't think it needs to be, and there are points where I think it's used effectively for humor, like when his internal monologue, he's having his internal monologue and then the drugs kick in and he just blurts out George W. Bush. That was funny. So I think that's really my only complaint about the movie, is it could be a little more sparing with some of the voiceover, but otherwise I loved this. I think the performances are great. I loved Joel Kim Booster and Bowen Yang's their characters' relationship. I thought they seemed believable as two old friends that are both, you know, can identify with each other, can identify with being gay Asian men, and like the you know, the pitfalls of that, and like, you know, feeling discrimination from, you know, fellow gay people, but then also like, I don't know, I just felt like there was definitely a kinship there despite the fact that they are so different personality wise. It's just, yeah, I really enjoyed the characters, the dynamics. I laughed a lot. Like, there's just a lot of funny and then topical humor. Like, they were joking about, like, investing in Quibi. Margaret Cho lost her fortune because she invested in Quibi.
Well, you know what's funny about that? This was supposed to be a TV show on Quibi.
Yeah.
And then when, it folded or whatever. Yeah, then it got transferred to being a movie.
That's
funny. So I was like,
that's some good behind the scenes info. I will say it is funny. I mean, I don't want to pretend that it's not. There are a lot of like laugh out loud moments in this, like the George W. Bush moment. I even laughed when Noah dropped his phone in the pool. I thought that was funny just because.
Right.
Yeah, me too.
You know? And then of course, like the phone in the bowl with all the right, you know, the dry rice being poured on top of it. It's like, not it. We've all done it, man. It ain't happening.
Right. And then because he doesn't have a phone, Will has to write him a note because he didn't know any other way to get in touch with him. I thought that was funny. I like their relationship in this. I love the scene where he forces Will to enter the dance competition.
Yes!
And he just goes for it with all of his terrible, terrible dance moves.
90s dance moves.
It seemed the characters and the people playing the characters are having fun in this movie. What more could you want from a kind of like summer romp kind of movie? It's like you should be enjoying the the atmosphere, and you know, when they're, you know, doing drugs, they're in the club. Like, it just seems like they're having so much fun. But I thought this was very funny, very charming. And I just liked seeing the variety of people in it. Like even the idea that like this group of friends, like there's like the snooty guys who are like, you know, obsessed with like six pack abs and like money. And they're like, these guys, we wouldn't hang out with these guys.
Oh,
and I just seen that dynamic when the guy, what's his name? Braden keeps going, can I help you?
Every time
he's met them like four times, he does not remember them. It's just like, I just thought that aspect of the movie was compelling. I like the music.
Music.
Me too.
Good.
Like,
yeah.
Especially their use of Last Dance.
And Britney Spears, Sometimes
Britney's, I Run. They do a good job of, like, even when they're covers, sprinkling in, you know, like, musicians who are queer icons throughout the movie, which I loved that aspect of it, too. And I loved that the friend group was there literally from beginning to end. They're, like, singing along to the 20th century logo or whatever it is, the searchlight. And then at the end, so they have this thing in the movie where they count down the sunset, and then like it's getting low, but they're not sure how much time. They're like, one, 0.9. Yeah. And then they do that at the end of the credits too. They're counting down the end of the credits.
Yeah. See, now the thing that's funny is when the movie started and the Fox logo came up and I heard just like, there's just some talking before they start singing along with it. I was like, wait, what the fuck? And then I realized what they were doing. And I was kind of hoping that the movie would just, in my opinion, be that boisterous. I mean, it is boisterous, but not in the way that I thought, you know, singing the Fox logo would be. I don't know. I'm sorry to be kind of a wet blanket, guys. It's fine. It's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, it's just, just didn't work for me the way it worked for both of you.
I mean, that's fair. Oh, the one other thing I wanted to mention is what I love about, and you mentioned this before, Megan, so it's really just building on what you're saying. It's about queer people just existing in a queer space. So like so many movies, like rom-coms and, you know, gay stories revolve around kind of like three themes. It's like, one, it's like a coming out story, which this isn't.
Yeah.
Or two, it's like, I'm in love with someone who it's maybe straight and doesn't love me back, and we have to figure that whole mess out. Or three is usually, or there's like a story involving HIV and AIDS and like, you know, dealing with all the complexities of that. And this is just joyous. Like you said, it's just queer people existing in queer space. It's joyous and everyone is having fun, and it's, I love that about this. I love that that this movie exists in that way.
completely agree. And not just because I started saying that first. So yes, Evan, I agree with you that you agree with me. But yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, like coming out stories are important. Like I never want to say like we shouldn't have more coming out films because we already have a ton. Like, no, we should have more because everybody's coming out story is different and you never just come out once. It's a process of coming out repeatedly throughout your life, many people. But yeah, but I completely agree with you. There's so many tropes in queer films and this is doing something different. And I love that it is using conventional rom-com tropes and it's using such a famous story of Pride and Prejudice, one that we all know, one that I love. I never get tired of a love triangle or an enemies to lovers trope. Never, never. So I love that. I love that it's using those
enemies
things.
To lovers. Yeah.
Yes. I love that it's doing that. And I love that it's doing that, you know, in such a fun, joyous way and that it's with queer people. And it just makes my queer heart so happy.
I love the part where the doctor's name, what is it, Charlie? He goes to find Howie and they like steal the boat and they pull up the dock and there's like, this is your moment. You got to do something big. He's like, I love you. And they're like, no, no, that's stupid. Rein it back in. That's too far. That's too far. And, you know, and then, you know, when Noah and Will are having a moment, it's like, yeah, I don't want monogamy. Oh, me neither. Okay.
I know.
Yeah. All right. It's not for everybody. And at least these people are on the same page about it.
Yep. But I also kind of like, and you know, that Noah's kind of obsessing, like, well, what's going to happen? We're so different. I don't know if it's going to work. And Will's like, let's just take it one day at a time. Let's see where it goes. And that's a very refreshing ending for a couple in a rom-com, because whenever you see a rom-com and people get together, the kind of implied ending is that, well, they lived happily ever after. They're going to be together forever. And that's just not reality. And it's not realistic. And of course, it's a film, you know, so doesn't necessarily have to be realistic. But it's kind of refreshing to be like, you know what? I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe we'll only be together today. Maybe we'll only be together like a month or 2 years. Who knows? But we're going to enjoy it while we are here together and we're going to enjoy the moment. And it's just, there's just something really lovely about that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it reminds me of something that Dan Savage talks about on his show a lot about, you know, successful short-term relationships. And there's something to be said for them, you know, like, so you might meet someone and you're great and it might only be for a few months or it might be for a year or two. And that doesn't mean it's a failure. It just means that you're like, you met the person and you had a great time and you should treasure that experience and take it and move on to the next thing.
Yep. Yes, agreed. Anyway, I was going to go off on a tangent, but I'm not. But what I do want to say that you reminded me of is that something I love about this is, in addition to all of the representation, in addition to seeing different kinds of gay people, in addition to seeing, you know, lots of Asian American gay men and, you know, Black gay men and lots of people of color, which is great, mm-hmm. and not just white gay men, I also really love that we see men making out. We see male sex scenes. And it's so often that when you do get a queer character in a film or even a queer mm-hmm. film, a lot of times it's sanitized. And yeah. this is not. Nope. And it's just great.
Right. I mean, one of the gags involves Noah, you know, giving Dex a blowjob. He's like yes. pants down. His face is like right there. And then he stands up quickly yep. and knocks Dex in the nose. While yeah. people are going at it right behind them. And then
yeah,
another-
there's a threesome happening right behind right. him.
And there's another scene later where Noah's looking for Howie and he opens the door and there's just men having sex everywhere and he's like, Howie? Yep. And then they all like look around like, are you Howie? Are you Howie? Nope, nope, nope. Okay. All right. He's like, sorry, I thought bye. I'd try. And then he closes
that was,
the
that
door.
Was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's really, it's just, again, it's refreshing to see. It's, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. I could just keep gushing because I just enjoyed this so much.
Me too.
I didn't not enjoy all it. Right. I'm just going to throw that in there.
No, I know. We know. We know. You're not that's as enthusiastic of a supporter, but you still enjoyed it. Yeah. So, hey.
Exactly. That's all yeah. right.
All right. Well, then, is there anything else that we wanted to say about Fire Island?
No, I said everything I needed to, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, let's do probably an even quicker recap than usual because we just talked about two movies. We've got Watcher, which will be getting a release in theaters. I think it will be available on demand at some point. I don't know if right away, but definitely see it. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
How about you two?
Oh, I agree. You should. Yeah, it's worth seeing.
Yes, I recommend it.
And Fire Island is going to be available on Hulu. I'm not sure about theatrical release. Do you know? Do either of you know if it's going to be?
I don't remember reading about it. I remember Hulu.
Hmm. I think just Hulu.
Well, that will make it easy to see and just in time for Pride Month.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is definitely a good way to kick off Pride Month because it is, as we mentioned, oh so joyous. So highly recommend seeing this as well. I'm assuming, Megan, you agree. And Dave, sounds like you would even agree too.
Yeah, but I'm going to throw in a your mileage may vary, you know, so.
I definitely. Oh, sorry.
No.
I got too excited. Yeah, I definitely agree. This is feelings of exaltation blended with gravity. I love it. It's so good. Yes. I don't. Yes. So yes.
Awesome. Well, that just about wraps it up for this episode of Spoiler Piece Theater. I want to say a huge thank you to our editor, Otto Klammer. Otto, thank you, as always, for making us sound great week after week.
Thank you, Otto.
Thanks, Otto.
And if you want to find the show, you can hear us anywhere you get podcasts, but you can also find us at our website, which is spoilerpiece.com. We are all over social media if you want to follow us. We're Spoiler Piece Theater on Facebook. We're at Spoiler Piece on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and TikTok. And if you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Love to hear what you think about Watcher or Fire Island, or even if you've seen The Night of the Hunter, but maybe haven't subscribed to Patreon yet. We'd like to hear from you. There's two ways you can reach out to us. You can email us, spoilerpiece@gmail.com, or you can give us a call.
At 86221-PIECE.
You can leave us a message. You can send us a text, and we'd love to hear from you. If you like the show, please rate and review us. You can go to ratethispodcast.com/spoilerpiece and we'll take you to your platform of choice. We really appreciate it. It helps more people find the show. And if you really, really like the show, consider joining our Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/spoilerpiece. As I mentioned, we do exclusive audio for our patrons every week. And this week we talked about the 1955 Robert Mitchum film, The Night of the Hunter, which is a fun conversation. And then when you sign up for that, you unlock upwards of 200 bonus episodes that you can listen to. We also do monthly polls, etc., etc., so definitely check that out. My name is Evan Crean. I am co-chair of the Boston Online Film Critics Association and co-author of your 80s movie guide to better living. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd as Real Recon, and that's real as in film reel.
My name is Megan Kearns. I write film reviews for Edge Media Network. I too am a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. You can follow me on Twitter at OpinionSWorld or on Instagram and Letterboxd at TheOpinionS.
And my name is Dave Riedel. I write and talk about movies. I'm a member of the Boston Online Film Critics Association. And if you want to follow me on the tweets and all that stuff, I'm at Dave Sees Movies on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd.
Yeah, you are.
I am. For now.
We'll see you next
Period.
Week, folks.
Bye. Oh, no. Bye. 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 Bye.